Hey friends, it's me again. You know what's really easy to do and even easier to forget? Help me out and hit that like button if you're listening on YouTube. If you're listening somewhere else, what the hell? Pop in and give me a thumb. Say hi while you're at it. Helps me a ton with that damn algorithm. And besides, it's always nice to see you there. All right then, let's hop on that crazy train.
All aboard!
Hey, welcome back, friend. It's a very special night tonight. I've got not one, but two stories for you. This is, of course, in service of International Medical Liaison Day. You have any idea what that is, Chester? Me neither. But that never stops me from celebrating. Come on in, friend. Let's party. No cigarette tonight. I ain't celebrating shit. Well, check out simplyscarypodcast.com and become a patron. For as little as $7.99 a month, you can get their entire catalog ad-free and available to download or stream. It's a good way to show your support, and you get a whole lot for it. Hey, also, if you want, you can check out patreon.com/drewblood. If you've ever wanted to help me out or support me directly, that's a good way to do it. If not, that's cool too. Well, tonight, friends, we welcome back a good pal and international medical liaison, P.D. Williams. In this one, we join four traveling blues musicians on their way to Clarksdale for a gig. Needless to say, they get sidetracked a little. So, without further delay, from author P.D. Williams, I give you Long Way. August 19, 1936, somewhere between Utica and Clarksdale, Mississippi. The summer was unbearably hot, even for Mississippi. The hateful heat shriveled crops and evaporated ponds and streams, turning their beds into curled, cracked mud. People felt like melting candles as they languished in the mosquito-laden land along the Mississippi Delta. The late-night air offered no respite. It was thick and humid. Breathing it was like sucking in sludge. The cramped interior of the Ford Model A stank of stale cigarettes, corn whiskey, and foul sweat. The four exhausted musicians, known as the Bama Boys, sat pressed together like sardines in a tin. They had just played several one-hour sets at a dilapidated blues bar in Utica, Mississippi called Willie's Shack. All they had to show for it were blistered fingers and $30, barely enough for gas and supplies. Earl Calhoun, the driver, served as the group's piano player and manager. The others called him Earl the Pearl because of the silky sales pitch he used to book gigs and dispel trouble. Also, as the only member who owned the car, he provided transportation. He had bought the used 1928 Ford from a white store owner in Moundville, Alabama, who had lost his general store to the Great Depression. The man had taken the money and joined the exodus of miners and farmers in search of opportunity, or whatever might lie at the end of the rainbow. His bad luck was the band's gain. The Black Cat, as the quartet called it, lumbered along a narrow backwoods road, churning up clouds of tan dust that coated the car's black frame like cheap paint, the combination of the dull colors making it look like an orange jalopy. The small trailer behind appeared to have a wheel of its own, swaying back and forth like a palm tree in the breeze. It pulled like a stubborn dog against its leash upon acceleration and brought about strained necks with each jolting stop. Deep shadows towered on either side of the desolate ribbon of road they were navigating. A pale silver moon and the short beam of the headlights illuminated the lightless lane. It created an eeriness that unsettled Earl. The band's upright bass player, Isidore Jackson, slept in the front seat, his heavy snoring rumbling like a freight train. For the life of him, Earl couldn't figure out why the man wore a suit and hat in midsummer. He had asked Isidore about his curious choice of clothing once. Isidore, a devout Baptist, had said that he wore his Sunday go-to-meeting clothes for the sake of convenience. In the Deep South, being a black man meant he was always in danger. He figured that if he met with a violent end at the hands of a good old boy, his family wouldn't have to bother dressing him for his funeral. Earl glanced at the rearview mirror to check on the backseat riders. Kephas Montgomery, the guitarist, lay slumped against the car door. Kephas didn't talk much. No one could be sure if it was because he was a shy man by nature or if it was self-conscious about his several missing teeth. At a juke joint a few years prior, Kephas had nearly gotten himself arrested after an altercation with a drunk patron who had called him No Teefus Kephas. By the time Kephas had tucked the straight razor back into his sock, there had been little left of the loud mouth but a puddle of blood and a cheap pair of loafers. The unconscious man using Kephas' shoulder as a pillow was the band's drummer, Joseph Lemon Cake McCoy. The moniker had come about because his wife always packed him several slices of her legendary lemon cake for the road. A common phrase he used was,
"All this man needs is good loving, an occasional jar of shine, and my sweet baby's lemon cake."
Despite the occasional jostling from the hidden potholes lined in wait along the deserted stretch of dirt, all three passengers remained as dead to the world as Abraham Lincoln. As for Earl, he was fighting to stay awake, the rhythm of the road lulling him closer to sleep with each passing mile. The group would have benefited from a night at a motel, but all of the accommodations were reserved for whites only. For the same reason, the car also served as their diner. The menu was simple, bologna and bread. On rare occasions, Lemon Cake would share some of his wife's delicious dessert. The band didn't want to draw unwanted attention to itself, something unwise in states below the Mason-Dixon line. They only exited the car to buy gas, food, and cigarettes, if they could afford them. To quench their thirst, they frequently passed around a gallon jug of corn whiskey. The Bama boys were 2 hours into a six-hour drive to their next gig in Clarksdale, a pinprick town not far from Memphis that ran along the Sunflower River. It was near Clarksdale, legend had it, that a mediocre blues guitarist named Robert Johnson had cut a deal with the devil. The infamous meeting had taken place under the midnight moon at a crossroads where Highway 49 and 61 converged. The deal involved the exchange of Robert's soul for greater talent, something he lacked at the time. Afterward, Robert seemed to have fallen off the earth. It is said that when young Mr. Johnson showed up a year later, he had mysteriously become a gifted musician without peer. For a short while, he had gotten what he bargained for, until a jealous husband poisoned his drink. He had likely died knowing that if you dance with the devil, he's always gonna lead.
"Where's we?"
said a voice from the back seat, startling Earl.
"Dang, Lemon Cake, you about skipped me half to death."
When he settled down, Earl said,
"I reckon we's about 4 hours or so from Clarksdale."
Lemon Cake sat upright and loosened his neck with a crack.
How long was I here? I don't know, maybe 2 hours. Keep it down so you don't wake the others."
"Oops, sorry,"
Lemon Cake whispered.
"Too late,"
Kephas said, his tired eyes remaining shut.
"Sorry, man,"
Lemon Cake said.
"That's okay. My shoulder was starting to ache a mite."
Kephas grunted from the effort that it took to pry open his weighty eyelids. He eased to a full sitting position, smacking the sleep from his lips.
"Say, Earl, you want me to drive for a while? I imagine you can use the rest."
"Yeah, thanks. I'm starting to see double."
"How much further we got to go till Clarksdale?"
"Like I was telling Lemon Cake, maybe another 4 hours."
"Oh, that's cool. Just pull over and I'll take it from here. We can all snooze once we hit the town limit."
"Sounds like a plan, my man."
Earl was relieved to be getting some rest. He had over-imbibed at Willie's shack, But that's how it worked sometimes. Patrons who were grinning, greased, and gassed would often buy beer for the band. The guys always accepted their generosity. It helped to lessen the sting from making next to nothing from the bar owner.
"Hey, there's a place up ahead on the right,"
Lemon Cake pointed out. Just as the black cat was approaching the spot, it lurched. After a few sputters, thick steam rolled from under the hood. It jerked forward one last time before giving up the ghost.
"Oh, Lord, no!"
Earl moaned, slamming a fist against the steering wheel.
"What you think it is?"
Lemon Cake asked.
"Bound to be the radiator,"
Kiefa said.
"This doggone heat is hell on an engine."
Earl closed his eyes, then sighed.
"I'll go check it out. Y'all sit tight."
Lemon Cake chuckled.
"Where else are we gonna go way out here in the boonies?"
Earl opened his creaky car door and climbed down, slamming it loud enough to wake Isidore. Then he went to the front of the vehicle and opened the hood to inspect the damage.
"What's up?"
Isidore asked groggily, shaking alertness back into his head.
"Radiator shot,"
Kiefis explained. Isidore leaned his head out the window and took in the dark, empty landscape.
"Man, there ain't nothing out this way. It ain't the edge of the world, but you can see it from here."
Earl slammed the hood shut and went back to inform his passengers of his unfortunate assessment.
"Sorry, boys, but she dead and gone. Guess this is what we get for naming a car after an animal that bring bad luck. Look like we might be walking from him."
"Fool, is you crazy?"
Lemon Cake asked.
"There ain't nothing but miles of back roads and cornfields all around these parts here."
"Maybe one of us could walk to the next town and find a mechanic to tow us to a garage,"
Kiefis offered. Isidore snickered, shaking his head.
"Oh, yeah, I'm sure there's a nice white boy here in the sticks who'll start dancing a jig when a Negro asks him to tow his car back to town."
"He's right,"
Earl lamented.
"Assuming we find somebody to help us out, he's probably gonna want some money up front. I don't think it's smart for one of us to go walking around some crack of town with money in his pockets. That's a good way to get yourself beaten and robbed."
Kiefis pursed his lips, his dour expression displaying a lack of enthusiasm.
"I hate to say it, but Earl's right. Let's roll up the windows, lock the doors, and hope nobody breaks into the trailer and makes off with the instruments."
Lemon Cake sulked.
"Looks like we're taking ourselves a little midnight stroll, boys."
"Sound like it,"
Isidore groaned, leaving his comfortable seat behind and stepping from the car. He caught up with Earl, who was well on his way. Lemon Cake joined the party, followed by Kiefis.
"Keep y'all's head on a swivel. Ain't no telling what might get after us,"
Earl warned. The lane was all but lightless, save for a slice of moonlight. The men shuffled wordlessly, the only sound being cricket songs and the crunching of packed earth beneath their feet.
"How long y'all reckon before we find a town?"
Isidore asked, breaking the silence.
"Hope it's soon,"
Lemon Cake said.
"These shoes feel like they're getting tight about a minute."
Earl halted, a look of concern on his face. The others continued a few steps further before stopping as well.
"Sup, Earl?"
Kiefis asked, looking back.
"You look like you done seen a ghost."
"Y'all hear that?"
Earl asked.
"Hear what?"
Isidore replied.
"I ain't heard nothing but the creek."
An unnatural quiet hung over them like a heavy cloud, choking out all other noises.
"Where'd the crickets go?"
Lemon Cake asked.
"I never heard that many crickets just stop all of a sudden,"
Kiefis muttered.
"Man, this just got strange."
Earl felt disquieted as well, but as the de facto leader, he felt responsible for keeping the others calm and focused.
"Let's stop worrying about them bugs and get moving. We got a show in Clarksville we gotta get to."
"I agree with Earl,"
Kiefis said.
"We got bigger fish to fry."
"Lead the way then,"
Isidore said. They had gone a mile or so when a loud rustling sound emanated from a cornfield on their right. The group froze in their tracks. Hearts pounded and bones shook as they turned to face the mysterious movement. Suddenly it ceased. No one spoke. Seconds became like minutes as they waited for the rustling to resume.
"Y'all see anything?"
Earl whispered.
"Oh, over there,"
Lemon Cake stuttered, pointing a shaky finger at the army of cornstalks.
"Look, about 15 feet in, 10 feet to the right."
At first, no one else saw it. Then Earl spoke up.
"Oh, my Lord, look there near the ground."
Two small white dots close together pierced the shadows of the field.
"Is them a dog's eyes?"
Isidore asked.
"Might be a cat,"
Kiefer said. Earl was about to dismiss the matter and get them all on their way again when his blood frosted. The points of light climbed until they reached a height of 12 feet. They narrowed, as if the being they belonged to was angry and filled with terrible intentions. The dark demon's eyes were terrifying. Its gurgling hiss was worse. Astonishment held tight to the men, as several more glowing eyes rose on either side, their unseen source emitting the same soul-freezing hisses.
"Rah!"
Lemon Cake shrieked. Everyone took off as if they had been fired from a cannon. The hard dirt crackled like popcorn as they stampeded further into the night, leaving behind them contrails of dust. They ran until their leg muscles burned and their lungs wearied. The group bent over, hands on knees, pulling in dank country air in deep gulps.
What in heaven's name was them things?"
Kephas asked through deep pants.
"I don't know, but I think we lost them,"
Isidore said. Earl took charge again.
"Let's catch our breath, and then we'll move on. Make sure to keep the noise down. We don't want them things catching up with us. We might not be so lucky next time."
Once everyone had rested, they continued their journey towards civilization, no matter how small or far it turned out to be. The next several miles passed without incident. Still, everyone remained vigilant. Earl was about to call for another rest when he saw a large yellow glow in the distance.
"Y'all look beyond the crossroad up ahead. I think we might have found a town."
"Ah, thank you, Lord,"
Isidore said, joined by a chorus of amens.
"Amen!"
Earl grinned widely.
"All right, boy, let's get to it."
They took only a few steps before stopping. The distant light turned from yellow to blue, rising several feet in the air. Small horizontal bars of red peeked through the blue light and began flashing. Within seconds, a large spinning disc hovered above them. Aside from a mild hum, it emitted no other noises.
"What's going on down here in this devil's place?"
Lemon Cake screamed. The light intensified, causing the men to fear being cooked alive. However, instead of creating a blood-boiling heat, the beam produced a coldness that made their skin prickle and their breath plume. A blinding ray of white light encompassed them, forcing them to shield their eyes.
"Oh, shit."
Soon they felt weightless, floating towards something that held immense power. Each man heard the other screaming in terror, their high pitches matched only by his own. Every hair on their body stood upright as static electricity hummed all around them. Ozone permeated the air, producing a sickening sweet smell of rotten fruit. As the celestial hostages sank deeper into the ship, the sounds of clanking machinery and low buzzes increased. After a few more horrifying minutes, everything went black and silent. Then, nothingness. Later, In what seemed to them like mere minutes, the quartet found themselves on the side of a dirt road in brilliant daylight. Around them, birds sang melodies of wonder. Wildflowers undulated in a warm summer dance. The men sat up and looked around at the bucolic setting, confused but enchanted. Their eyes turned to one another, hoping someone could account for the lost time. Kephas found his voice and spoke first.
Are y'all okay? I think we might have all passed out.
Earl stood and began slapping the dust from his clothes.
Am I the only one who remembers what happened last night? No, sir.
Lemon Cake answered, sitting up.
Either we done lost our dang fool mind, or some big old machine sucked us up into it. Does any of y'all remember what happened whilst we was up there?
Isidore stood and stared into the distance.
I don't remember anything after that light pulled me up, and I don't want to either. In fact, I ain't never gonna speak a word of this to nobody. Y'all would do well to keep this to yourselves, too.
Each man looked to the others for either agreement or disagreement.
I'm with Isidore,
Earl said.
None of us can be sure what happened, so we should just keep this little escapade to ourselves. Agreed.
The others nodded.
All right, then. Let's get to walking. Hopefully we didn't end up too far from a town.
Sweet relief washed over them when after only a few miles they entered the dusty town of Clarksdale.
I don't know what that thing was, but it sure was nice of it to give us a ride into town,
Lemon Cake said, smiling.
You got that right, brother,
Kephas added. Earl noticed a bent old man sweeping the wooden porch of a small store across the dirt road.
Hey!
He yelled to the man.
We're from out of town. We're playing tonight at a juke joint called Big T's. Can you tell us where it is?
The man leaned his broom against the wall and crossed the street.
Y'all must be them boys from down south of here. I hear y'all pretty good jazz band.
No, brother.
Earl chuckled.
We play blues.
Smooth blues,
Isidore added. The sweeper rubbed his chin and thought.
Blues, huh? Well, I thought Big T booked a jazz band. No matter. Looked like y'all traveling light. Where's y'all's instruments?
We had some car trouble back up that road there,
Earl explained.
If y'all got a mechanic around here, we need him to fetch our car. It's hard to play without instruments.
The man grinned.
Oh, y'all ain't gotta worry about that none. Big T's already got some instruments set up. Y'all can borrow them till Mac can tow your car.
That works,
Isidore said.
Any chance they got a stand-up bass in there?
They got that and some other instruments to boot. We come across them almost a year to the day back up that same road y'all broke down on. Shit, just an empty car with a trailer hitched to it. There wasn't no sign of the owner, so we hauled it back.
Earl's stomach churned.
Don't suppose there was a name on the trailer, was there?
Sure enough was,
the man said.
The Bama boys.
Despite the morning heat, a frigid gust passed through the befuddled, frightened men.
God help us. Where we been for the last year?
Kephas asked, his voice trembling. The man snickered.
Sound kind of like what old Robert Johnson said when he come to town.
While the others stood mute and petrified, Lemon Cake put it all together.
How come I think we gonna be a whole lot tighter?
Mosquitoes are knowing our names. Then the sky swung open like a tavern door on a star. We left Mississippi gravel, woke up thumbing rides on Mars. Kiefer said, you hear that? Earl said, that ain't no train. Isidore drank more moonshine.
Sam and Kate got down to pray. Up we went slow spinning, hats floating off our heads. I promised every saint I knew I'd quit my blues in bed. I lied, yeah, that old battle motorly broke down on a nowhere dirt red lane. We was shaking, we was praying, trying to bargain with our names. Then the sky swung open like a tavern door on stars. We left Mississippi gravel, woke up thumbing rides on Mars. Them green folks poke my suitcase, ask what's this wailing wood. We played on three set numbers, they clap like angels would. They said y'all boys got rhythm, but this road ain't your scene. Next blink we stood dumbfounded. And brought right back.
Or a whole lot looser. I've heard what those aliens do. Anyway, that was Long Way by author P.D. Williams, y'all. In the next one, we're joined by Jared, my wannabe influencer looking to cash in on compassion by feeding the hungry. So, without further delay, from author P.D. Williams, I give you Kind. Jared wasn't feeling it today. He envied people for whom kindness came naturally. He found he had to crank the handle until the engine turned over. As an aspiring content creator, he had tested various methods of self-promotion, but random acts of kindness had proved the most profitable. What did it matter if it was real or manufactured? A need was being met. His was a product purchased by ardent consumers who preferred to delegate their compassion to someone with a camera and a microphone. Jared's livelihood depended on that need, as did his insatiable desire for positive attention. His first streaming project, Rescuing Abused Dogs, had been a miserable failure. He would drive around inner-city neighborhoods searching for skinny dogs locked behind chain-link fences or tied to trees. After making sure the coast was clear, he'd strap on his head cam and try to lure the lonely animal with a dog biscuit. At the same time, he'd record himself talking about how much he cared about helpless animals. The first two episodes went well, although the second dog's burly owner chased him away with a baseball bat. Unfortunately, the third alleged victim of human cruelty belonged to a gangbanger who had taught his dog to shred anyone who came onto his property. Several stitches and a series of rabies shots later had put an end to that faux altruistic endeavor. Jared's second attempt at celebrity involved conning local florists into giving him free roses to pass out to female residents at retirement homes. Things had been fine until one recipient turned out to be allergic to roses and went into anaphylactic shock. As if the old bat had much longer to live anyway, he thought. Jared had remained depressed for weeks after the two fiascos. He had poured a lot of the stopping his wealthy parents afforded him into top-of-the-line recording equipment and editing software. Now he had nothing to show for it but another reason to disappoint them. He'd gone online to find a new strategy to gain an audience before giving up on his dream. That's when he found the footage of a man in Oregon who had put together a strong media presence by claiming to feed homeless people. The editing was choppy, the logistics implausible, but the act was reeling in a lot of views. "Pay attention, Jared," he said to himself. "This is how the pros do it." A few months later, the Clarion call was bearing fruit. He had amassed over 1 million followers, a generous GoFundMe account, and public recognition. However, as it often is with spoiled children who get what they want, he became jaded. Now, he was sitting in his polished Lexus SUV in front of a small family restaurant called Good Stuff, working to find his mojo.
"Come on, Jared,"
he said, hoping to encourage himself.
"Time to fake it till you make it."
Once he felt inspired, he exited the SUV, switched on his head cam, and made his grand entrance into Good Stuff.
"What's that delicious-looking food you're serving?"
Jared asked the harried server, who was trying to get past him.
"Why do you have that weird camera apparatus on your head? Are you recording this?"
the young woman asked.
"Yes, I am. So what's on those platters? They smell amazing."
The server, Nell was her name, became impatient.
"They're salmon tacos, and they're $13.50 a plate. If you want to place an order, take a table, and I'll get to you as fast as I can. It's pretty hectic, in case you haven't noticed."
Jared had only a few days to prepare the latest footage, so he needed to expedite the process.
"Look, as long as you're here, I'd like to buy 100 of those taco platters. They're for the homeless. I'm a champion of their cause."
Nell was familiar with internet idiots chasing followers and sponsors in what amounted to little more than a vanity project gone awry.
"Dude, this is a small family business. Does it look like we have the staff and product to fill an order that big?"
"You don't seem to understand, sweetheart. I'm a popular kindness influencer who's helping bolster local restaurants and help needy people at the same time. Is the owner or manager here?"
Nell glared at Jared as if he were a cockroach who had scurried from under a table.
"The owner's name is Joe. That's him at the counter. Now if you'll excuse me, I'm trying to feed the hungry too."
Nell pushed past Jared, the weight of his oversized head cam almost causing him to topple.
"Gee, thanks, Nell,"
he muttered. He walked a short distance to the counter, where a heavyset man was ringing up a customer.
"Hey, are you Joe?"
"That's right. Who are you?"
Jared straightened his spine and extended his hand.
"I'm Jared, but most people know me as Lil J. You may have seen my stuff online. I come into small restaurants such as yours and purchase large orders of food to feed the homeless. I'd like to order 100 of your salmon taco platters."
Joe's expression belied his skepticism.
"Are you on the up and up? You really want to place that many orders?"
"I sure do. The homeless population right here in your own backyard will love and appreciate a taste of your amazing cuisine."
"Let me think," Joe said, crunching figures in his head. "First, you're going to be looking at $13.50 for the meals and around $100 in sales tax. That brings you to $1,450. I'll have to pay my line cooks overtime to work all night, pay extra for a rush delivery of ingredients, and buy a lot of to-go containers. That's another $2,000 at least. Your total's now up to around $4,000. Do you have a truck and some assistance? If not, I can provide both for an extra $500. For that kind of cost and labor, I'm going to need you to pay up front. It's the best I can do."
Jared switched off the head cam.
"Here comes the bait, followed by the hook," he thought. "That's pretty pricey, I have to say. How about if we work something out that's beneficial for both of us? Something that'll cost us very little."
"Gone,"
Joe said, taking the bait.
As I've said, I've been working this gig for a while. I've amassed over 2 million followers. If you do me a solid, I'll promote your restaurant on my social platforms. The goodwill, national exposure, and additional business generated will far exceed what it's going to cost you. Plus, my fan base love a feel-good story about a local hero who helps the downtrodden. A lot of entrepreneurs like you have seen their revenue soar because of my media influence. What do you think? Want to help people and increase brand awareness at the same time? I'm telling you, social media is the best way to advertise. Come on, Joe, I'll scratch your back if you scratch mine.
Joe's wariness remained.
Sounds a bit sketchy to me. Looks like you stand to gain the most from this.
Like a seasoned salesman, Jared knew the script on how to overcome objections.
Listen, Joe, I can help your bottom line, or I can convince over 2 million viewers that you're a self-centered douchebag who shouldn't be allowed to stay in business. One way or another, that sign of yours out front is going to be featured in my next post. You tell me how you want to be presented.
Joe scowled, his dark eyes radiating malice.
You got some nerve coming into my place and threatening me.
Is that a no I'm hearing? Look, we're both professionals. Wouldn't you like to at least hear my pitch?
Joe softened. It seemed like he had very few options. This creep had his number.
Okay, I'm listening.
This was the part that required Jared to carefully position the hook.
Here's how it works, he explained. I turn the camera on and pretend to ask you for food for the local homeless. You pretend to recognize me from my heartwarming posts. Next, you thank me for my good works and how you'd love to help me change the world one empty belly at a time. I'll order 100 taco platters. You pretend to jump at the opportunity. Now here's what I call the smart part. Cut to you bringing out what appears to be the last bags of the huge order. You'll say something like, I hope the needy folks in our town enjoy them. God bless you for your kindness, or some other crap like that.
Joe interrupted.
But we don't have that many homeless people in the entire city. More like 100, tops. Besides, won't your followers realize that the excessive amount of food becomes inedible after traveling in the heat all afternoon? That's a lot of perishables to be handing out. You and I might end up getting sued. I have a lot to lose here.
Details, Joe, Jared scoffed. Mere details. Stay with me on this. I offer to pay for the grub, but you insist on donating it because you want to join with a great person like me in a noble cause. I thank you for your generosity, and then you and Nell offer to help me with the bags. Once we go outside, I record us pretending to load the last of the order into my vehicle. Then, and this is the best part, I get a shot of you standing in front of your restaurant sign while I plug the crap out of your amazing menu. That's where your part ends. The money shot will come a short time later when I arrive at an encampment a few blocks from here. I'll record myself handing out the stuff you graciously donated to the one society has forgotten. But good old Joe remembered. I'll do some clever editing, add some poignant music, post a video, then ka-ching! You get great publicity, I gain viewers, and that brings sponsors. It's a win-win, Joe. You in?
Joe wasn't entirely at peace with the idea. Or was it a scheme? Either way, it felt exploitative.
I'd only have to give away 50 orders, and you handle the rest.
And we reel in another beauty, Jared thought with smug satisfaction. That's all you have to do. I'll go grab a seat while you get busy with the tacos. And say, as long as I'm waiting, how about having Nell run me out a complimentary order for myself? What's another free meal between partners, am I right?
What the heck's this mess?
The disgruntled vagrant asked Jared.
It's salmon tacos, Jared beamed. They cost quite a lot, but the smiles on your faces make it all worthwhile. By the way, could you guys turn those smiling faces toward the camera?
The small group of bedraggled bums crawled from tents and weathered appliance boxes and made their way toward the scent of fresh food.
Oh, I know you,
said a female.
You were over at Chestnut and 26 last week passing out food. What'd you bring us today?
It says it's salmon tacos,
said the first taker, picking at the lukewarm meal.
It smells more like unwashed tuna tacos, if you ask me. Hey, Cracker Boy, what's that gizmo on your head?
Another vagrant asked Jared.
Looks expensive. How about you keep that stinky fish mess and give me that camera instead?
Yeah,
another man said.
I can enjoy more stuff with what I can get for that thing than I can with this nasty food. Who the hell want a fish taco anyways? You couldn't bring us no real tacos? You could have hit the drive-thru at Taco Bell and saved yourself the money. Now they know how to make a proper taco.
As if on cue, others began throwing the stale, pungent food on the ground.
Ungrateful pricks, Jared thought.
He was hoping to have another video ready for the coming week's post. He needed to salvage the project, but how? Inspiration struck. He turned off the head cam.
I cannot believe you guys don't want these tacos. I had no idea that you kind of people had such discriminating palates. Is there anywhere else I can take this stuff? I need to pass it all out before it spoils.
A man next to him chuckled. It was soft and sinister.
Don't you do it, Melvin. Don't you dare send that boy down there,
a woman said to the man. Jared saw hope.
Wait, what? What do you know, Melvin?
If you're bound and determined to record yourself handing out this crab, I can steer you in the right direction. It'll cost you $20 first.
I'm thinking a new SUV,
another man said, gazing at Jared's luxury vehicle. Ignoring the threat, Jared placed the bribe in Melvin's outstretched palm.
All right, you've got your money. Now then, where's this place you're talking about? Hurry up, I've got better things to do.
What you want to do is hang a right out of this here alley. Drive 5 miles, then make a left on Waterbrook Drive. Yeah, a few blocks down, you'll see an old culvert on your right. Follow it, and you'll come to a tunnel partially hidden by kudzu. I hope you ain't in love with them nice sneakers you got on, 'cause you'll have to walk a good ways in. As you go along, make sure you let them know you're coming, and that you ain't there for no trouble. Yeah, that crew is a little rough and tumble, but they're as needful as any other homeless folk round these parts. But I wouldn't worry too much. Just flash them that big, beautiful smile of yours and tell them heaven sent you.
Anything else I ought to know?
You're gonna want to park that sweet ride your daddy bought you out of sight. If them kids from the neighborhood sees it, it's as good as gone, feel me?
Yeah. I hope the cavemen you're sending me to appreciate this pricey chow more than you dregs did.
Jared sniffed. Melvin grinned, revealing his broken meth teeth.
Oh, don't you worry about that, rich little white boy. Them people eat anything. Good luck.
Jared turned and stomped back to his SUV, slamming his door so hard that it startled some of the campers. He cranked the massive motor, then left in a spray of gravel.
Why'd you have to do that?
Asked the woman who scolded Melvin earlier.
He was just trying to help out.
Melvin sneered, spitting on the busted styrofoam container of spoiling fish at his feet.
No, he wasn't. His type never does.
Grasping a couple of bags filled with styrofoam containers, Jared took a few steps into the black tunnel, immediately regretting wearing his $350 custom Air Jordans. A shallow river of muck from a recent rain made the endless tube of darkness smell musky, like wet clothing festering in a hamper. He aimed the head cam's light into the tunnel, finding only trash and bottles.
Nothing sketchy about this place,
he chuckled. He listened for movement, voices, anything, but only an eerie silence greeted him.
Hello?
Nothing. He thought about leaving. However, the short drive had been filled with thoughts of how much drama interacting with tunnel dwellers would bring. Their struggles were far greater than those of dumpster divers.
Time to go. Daddy needs a new pair of shoes. Literally.
About 25 yards in, Jared detected movement ahead. He trained a ray of light down the wet trail and saw lines of rats scurrying, their skittering feet sounding like fingernails clacking on a computer keyboard. He cringed as his second thoughts became possible final thoughts.
Hey, is anyone there?
He yelled, his nervous hands holding tight to the bags of stale, mushy tacos. He waited, listening. After a moment, he called out again.
I brought you guys some free food. Is it okay if I join you?
That sounds great,
came the reply. Jared jumped at the sound of the booming voice.
You kind of gave me a start. I'm coming your way now.
Soon, Jared saw a soft flickering glow. A campfire, perhaps. As he neared it, he noticed a lone figure wearing a hoodie huddled next to a burn barrel, his face obscured by shadows. When the person spoke, his words carried authority. Remaining more focused on the flames than Jared, he said,
My name's Malcolm. Welcome to my world. What do they call you?
My name's Jared, but my stage name's Lil J.
Good to meet you,
Malcolm said, giving the stranger a quick glance.
What do you have there?
Jared held out the bags for Malcolm to see.
They're salmon tacos, the expensive kind.
Malcolm grunted his approval.
That's wonderful. They'll add some variety to our diet. Sewer rats lost their allure after a while.
He and Jared shared a brief laugh over the humorous remark. Then he continued.
However, I do harbor some concerns.
Such as?
I appreciate your charitable spirit, but I've learned that most outsiders have ulterior motives that are often self-serving. What is it you want from us? Please do me the courtesy of honesty.
The media master once again baited the hook.
I do have another reason for being here, but it's something that will be to your benefit. I'm what's known as a kindness influencer. I inspire others to pay my generosity forward. I want to record our interaction to post on my social media accounts.
It sounds as if you're asking us to perform for our food. I find the idea degrading and manipulative.
Jared bristled.
Look, dude, I'm doing you people a favor by being here. It's dark, cold, and it stinks to high heaven. Do me a solid and you get free food. Easy peasy. So, can I film this or not?
Malcolm considered the offer.
I suppose that's reasonable.
Jared smirked. He reeled this one in with less effort than expected.
Super. Now, here's how this works. When I say action, you call your friends. I want you all to face the camera and smile nice and big. I'll tell you about myself and why I'm here, and then you'll thank me for my generosity and concern. Then I'll hand out these bags of food. If you all play nice, there's more where that came from. Once we're finished, I'll edit the video to make you look desperate but grateful, and then upload it to social media. My followers eat this stuff up. After seeing your situation, some of them might help you out. Money, food, money, more money. That's a lot of crack and booze, amigo. Now then, let's do this.
Jared set the bags of food down and pressed the head cam's record button.
Okay, get ready to be a star. Action!
Jared began his routine.
Wow! I'm so glad I found out about you guys.
It breaks my heart to see people like you struggling to survive. I brought some hot, delicious specialty food with me to hand out. Why don't you round up your friends? My loyal fans and I can't wait to meet them.
Upon hearing Jared's self-aggrandizing setup, Malcolm reconsidered.
Are you certain you want to meet my lowly tribe? They aren't as polished as you and your ignorant, bleeding heart fans. Fact is, I don't think you know the first thing about people like us.
Malcolm's hard words, coupled with his obstinacy, irritated Jared.
For crying out loud! Now I have to edit that out. If you want to help your cause, get your grubby friends out here right now. Otherwise, you can keep dining on the rats.
Have it your way,
Malcolm growled, then gave an ear-splitting whistle that made Jared wince.
Everyone come out. We've got a fella here who wants to feed us.
Jared heard the echoes of footsteps from the tunnels on either side of him. As they moved forward, the cavernous space filled with a smell like human waste. It brought to Jared's imagination a boiling cauldron of rotten animal guts. Pinching his nostrils, he said,
Good grief! Are you people bathing in the sewage?
Slumped, silent figures walked out of each of the tunnels, 6 from the left, 3 from the right. In the faint firelight, Jared saw they were naked from their waist up, their skin caked with black grime. Their skinny frames were pale from lack of light, and their breath raspy with phlegm. They clustered behind Malcolm like loyal subjects supporting their great Shadow King. In the dimness, Jared struggled to make out their faces.
I need you to come closer so I can get your gratitude on record. You are grateful, right?
Of course they are, said Malcolm.
That's what I thought. All right, let's begin again. And action! So, who wants some of this awesome food, courtesy of Little Jay?
Malcolm remained in place as the others shuffled toward Jared, their stench growing stronger as they closed the distance. When they stepped into the light, Jared felt his body go numb. To his horror, he found himself surrounded by gruesome creatures. If they had ever been human, it was ages ago. Greasy, matted hair grew past their shoulders. Beards fell to their chests. Their fingernails and toenails were like talons, blackened from years of digging and filth. Their hot, sour sweat, coupled with rancid breath, sickened Jared. Despite his fright, he realized it was time to become a salesman again.
You guys seem hungry. I feel so honored to provide you with some great food. Who wants the first package?
The tight group drooled with hunger and need as they waited for Malcolm, their leader, to give them permission to partake. Jared's nerves danced as his hubris fled him.
Maybe this wasn't such a great idea. How about I leave the food here and go in peace? I'll leave the rest of the food outside the tunnel. You can eat it at your leisure.
Jared's fear amused Malcolm. He turned away from the burn barrel and slowly approached Jared. As he drew closer, he said,
Do you really want to leave? This won't make good viewing for your fans. Don't you want them to see for themselves our plight? That's part of why you came here, correct?
He stepped into the head cam spotlight and removed the hood of his jacket. Jared gasped. Now he could see the man he had been negotiating with. As terrifying as the ones who had flanked him were, Malcolm's appearance was worse. Much worse. Bright yellow eyes peered out of his distorted face. An ear drooped down to cheek level, as if the side of his head were melting. Jared dreaded Malcolm's mouth the most. Its menacing grin revealed jagged teeth splotched with, was it human flesh? His bladder betrayed him as hot urine flowed down his pant leg. He feared the worst.
If you please,
Malcolm said, snatching the camera from Jared's head and placing it on his own.
Hello, fans,
he said with theatrical flair.
Lil J is about to feed some very hungry people. Isn't he a champ?
Stepping back to offer a fuller view, he told the hissing tunnel dwellers,
dig in.
Jared screamed in agony and terror as the creatures stripped away his flesh, using their claws and fangs as tools for gorging themselves. Malcolm moved in closer to record the devastation of Jared's once handsome face as one ghoul plucked his eye free and another chewed his tongue off. The social media whore's arms made loud wet pops as two others yanked them from their sockets, unleashing dual rivers of blood from the ragged holes. Malcolm panned the camera to allow Jared's followers to witness their selfless hero making good on his promise to feed the wretched rabble. As the cannibals laid Jared's half-eaten body on the ground for further consumption, Malcolm continued addressing the imaginary viewers.
Speaking for our camp, I'd like to thank the amazing and generous Lil J for taking the time to fill our bellies. We hope this motivates others to help us. As Jared would say, pay the kindness forward.
As the rest of the pack dined on Jared, Malcolm removed the head cam.
Don't forget to save me the bones,
he told the ravenous group.
There's nothing better than fresh marrow.
He turned and walked a short distance past the burn barrel, coming to his tent. Beside it was a stained and battered cooler. Using his foot, Malcolm opened its lid, then tossed Jared's head cam in with the others there.
Don't you love free food?
He mused.
Speaking of which,
he said, before turning to the others.
Dibs on the ribs!
And that was Kind by author P.D. Williams. I think we should eat all the influencers out there. Which one would you eat first, Chester? Not a bad choice. I'd eat her, too. A little about the author, friends. P.D. Williams is an author, musician, songwriter, and medical liaison to the stars. His music project, featuring Americana and indie country, is called Cowboys of the Amazon. Are we being serious here? This is... that's pretty cool. But you never know with PD whether he's fucking around or not. Anyway, see and hear his songs and videos on several streaming platforms like Spotify, YouTube, iHeartRadio, iTunes, Apple, and others. His alternative Christian rock catalog called Said the Cat is available... is this bullshit? This has got to be bullshit. Well, I'm just going to read it. It's here. His alternative Christian rock catalog, called Said the Cat, is available on the same platforms. His new collection of horror shorts? Yeah, I've got some horror pants. I ain't never had no horror shorts, though. Anyway, it's called Shards of Bone. It's available on Kindle, on Amazon, on Goodreads, and on other book outlets. Oh, and Craig and Lorna send their hellos. Hopefully they'll be back to see y'all again soon. Hey, thanks, PD.
And do old Drew Blood a favor, would you? Subscribe to his podcast wherever you do your listening and leave him a 5-star review and a kind word, even if you're listening on YouTube. He needs soldiers on all fronts to win this battle, and he appreciates it. To hear a premium ad-free edition of tonight's and all the other episodes, visit simplyscarypodcast.com today and click Patrons in the upper menu. You'll find yourself at ChillinTalesForDarkNights.com, where you can become a patron for as little as $5 per month and get access to their entire audio archive, all ad-free and available to download or stream. Thank you for your time and for supporting our sponsors. When you support our sponsors, you support this show. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chillin' Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all the latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with them each and every week. Oh, and you can find Drew Blood on Facebook and Instagram, and sometimes Twitter.
The Drew Bloods Dark Tales podcast is accepting submissions, friend. If you've got a story or two you'd like to be featured on the show, send it to drewbloodhorror@gmail.com. If selected, you'll get the full treatment, 10 bananas.
Well, I guess this is where we part ways, friend, at least till next week, maybe. So grab a drink for the road, and if you miss me out there on those lonesome roads, visit patreon.com/drewblood and hang out with me, Paul, and Jeff for a while. I've got mugs, too. Hey, check this thing out. Nice, right? Come sign up. Get a nice mug for yourself. And don't forget about PD. Grab a copy of his new book, Shards of Bone, on Amazon. And listen to his Christian music on indie country. I swear, that boy PD, man, he's always got some crazy shit going on. Anyway, may the road be at your back and may the wind rise up to meet you. And until we meet again, hey, y'all go fuck yourselves.